Welcome to the Omfer podcast.
Hello and welcome to the OMFIF DMI podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends, new developments and innovation, as well as the policy, technology and regulatory challenges in digital finance. I'm John Orchard, OMFIF CEO, and today I'm talking to Dr. Wolfram Seidemann, Chief Executive Officer of G&D Currency Technology in Germany. For those of you that are not aware, G&D provides banknote and securities printing, smart cards, and cash handling systems, and are providing leading technology in the digital currency space. Thank you, Wolfram, for joining me. In December, we published our report together, Consumer Attitudes on CBDC. I certainly thought it was a very interesting, instructive piece of work. A survey that we executed in Nigeria, Indonesia, Germany and the USA, which addressed different ways in which CBDCs could influence financial inclusion and digital innovation. And the report addressed the crucial requirements which policymakers need to review in order to come up with the right design for a retail CBDC. And during the podcast, we'll discuss those key findings of the report and what G&D have been doing in the space. And also, we'll talk about the Boston Fed's Project Hamilton and their recent report on phase one of that project, which looked at a high-performance payment processing system designed for CBDCs. So welcome again, Wolfram. Nice to talk to you today. In the survey that we did, which jurisdiction surprised you the most with their results?
Thank you, John. Well, public attitudes to CBDC is still an underexplored area. It's always hard to ask people for their opinion on topics that they aren't yet tangible. But in Nigeria, for example, the results were really remarkable, with over 90% of consumers saying that they are likely to use a CBDC. Same was true for Indonesia, with about 60%. And emerging markets often have a stronger motivation to foster financial inclusion. So they take the leap from not having an efficient cash infrastructure, people not having a bank account, straight to digitization. CBDC will also contribute to the growth of the digital economy and as a result drive the GDP of a jurisdiction as e-commerce continues to soar in these markets. What really surprised me was the low awareness in the US and Germany. Below 20% of the respondents have heard about the digital dollar or the digital euro at all.
Why do we think that is? It somewhat ties into a piece of work we did before that was equally interesting on retail attitudes to payments. You see this this disparity between developed markets and developing markets. So what, Wolfram, do you think is the explanation?
Well, perhaps there's more public knowledge from broader communication on these topics in emerging markets. I have the impression that we in Germany can read a lot about the digital euro in the press. However, awareness is still quite low. Since the younger population is more open to innovation and digitization, demographics may also play a key role. The median age in Nigeria is 18 compared to 47 in Germany. It could also be that consumers in developed markets are satisfied with their current payment options. They have many to choose from. But for the underbanked, there aren't so many options. So they are more alert and keen of any new payment alternatives that they may be available to them.
That leads on to the idea that some critics say CBDC is really only a topic for emerging countries. I've heard in many of our sessions, particularly from US participants in the official sector, the CBDC is a solution looking for a problem. Do you think that's true?
Well, I believe we should address the topic of CBDC not looking for a problem, but asking what innovation it can bring. And public currency is a liability of the central bank. Today, that means cash only. Cash brings a huge value to society, but it cannot be used in the digital world. CBDC would be the equivalent to cash in the digital age. In today's digitized world, digital payments are not a nice to have. Everyone should have an option to take part in the digital economy without third-party involvement or paying fees. Furthermore, a well-designed CBDC has the potential to create network effects. New products and business models can evolve from this platform. It's about the combination of possibilities united in one public solution. The relevance of the benefits may differ from country to country, though, depending on the actual payment infrastructure. Some cashless or less cash countries need to ensure financial stability and ensure that digital payments doesn't become the monopoly of private players. It's an important factor for payment sovereignty. Payment is part of the critical infrastructure of a country. So in the past days, we have seen the impact of having access to or exclusion from payment systems can have on one's economy.
In which case, there's a communication job to be done, as there so often is with all aspects of central banking. So what then do you think, Wolfram, is necessary to help increase awareness of CBDCs?
Yeah, as you said, John, communication and education are key. We think we need more open discussions with the general public about the benefits of CBDC and the potential use cases. People need to understand what it is, how it works, how it feels, and that the intention is not about taking control or making cash disappear. But from our side, we do our utmost to assist and guide our clients to design the best possible solution and to support them with our expertise. Of course, we are in continuous exchange with policymakers to illustrate the opportunities a CBDC offers.
Within the survey sample, it was surprising to us that the adoption of new payment apps was not as high as expected, especially in the developed markets. People are still using cash and cards. What is driving that, do you think, Wolfram? What is the infrastructure impacting consumers' ability to embrace digital payments?
Well, people face several challenges using digital payments today. Their concerns focus around safety, acceptance at merchants, network connection, data protection, and of course, with all regional differences and flavors. That gives us an indication on how CBDC should be designed so that it's widely accepted by the public. Internet coverage in rural areas can also be a hurdle for CBDC if offline payment is not considered in the design. And offline payment needs to be considered from the very beginning into the design principles of a CBDC solution. CBDC as legal tender must be accepted everywhere. However, readiness of the retail payment ecosystem is crucial. User devices need to be available. A well-designed CBDC must also work on low-cost devices, such as feature phones or smart cards. And CBDC must work even without a bank account to be a full inclusive payments system. All digital payments today require an account. Even in the US, 5% are unbanked or underbanked, 13%. That's why we at G&D developed a token-based CBDC that enables consecutive offline payments without the need of a bank account. A digital public currency needs to be truly inclusive and universal, just like cash in the physical world, but in the digital space.
What other factors then might drive adoption, do you think, Wolfram?
It's also clear that interoperability between CBDC and existing payment instruments is a critical success factor for widespread adoption. A seamless and universal CBDC that's interoperable with other means of payments will be a driver for adoption and inclusion. Ultimately, a CBDC will still need to somehow compete with the private payment giants on user experience if it is to be widely accepted. Therefore, we will need these private players to make CBDC an attractive complement to their existing options. The digital payment market is large enough for private and public entities to coexist, and by supporting this, it will allow all together for bigger growth.
From the beginning of this discussion, we've heard central banks essentially worrying about disruption from private currencies, potentially undermining their own capacity for conducting monetary policy, maintaining price and indeed financial stability. What are your thoughts on that, Wolfram?
Well, if we look at Bitcoin, which is based on blockchain technology, this was designed as an alternative to traditional payments. The advantage was, but then also turned into a disadvantage. An unregulated currency is an object for speculation, not a trusted value. people understood its risk and looked for more stability. That's why that led us to stablecoins. And stablecoins might be an attractive option for some time, but you will never have the protection, backing, or universal acceptance of central bank issued currency.
So you think it's still a risky option for now?
You never know if you can really trust the issuer. You're dependent from the issuer. If widely used, they can be a risk for the financial stability. With its growing presence, usage, and interconnection, we will see the implementation of stronger regulatory, supervisory, or oversight frameworks. However, I don't think that they can compete with CBDC, an instrument issued by the central bank. For now, they serve different purposes and target groups. The search for liability shows a demand for CBDC. If the demand is met by the central bank, the use of stablecoins might also change and translate into products and services around CBDC. That's how the CBDC ecosystem should work. The central bank issues the currency, the instrument, and the private sector adds value, develops new products and services around it.
Some people still worry that CBDC is a risk for financial stability, particularly if it's poorly designed. The fractional reserve banking system is quite a delicate and sophisticated thing. What tools could be considered to mitigate any potentially adverse impact of CBDC on the financial sector? And what would some of those tools be that influence the adoption by the public?
Yeah, talking about financial stability, we refer to the stability of the financial systems. And commercial banks and financial service providers are essential to our current physical cash cycle. And they will continue to play a critical role also in the digital CBDC cycle. They are the interface to the public, offering their services and products to individuals and businesses. So it's about measures to avoid bank runs from commercial bank money to CBDC. A limit of holdings are a much discussed topic in that space. It's an important factor to ensure stability of our financial systems. Some people may be critical of this, but to be honest, who actually keeps large amounts of cash at home at all times? For me, a possible remuneration of CBDC, in particular in negative interest rates, would be an issue. It's important that people can trust the value and the stability of the value of money. CBDC is just a digital form of cash, and there is no interest on cash, positive or negative, just as banknotes in your wallet. No one can predict the future, but we need to consider the implications. That's why we partner also with a company called FNA to develop an agent-based CBDC simulator to model the impacts of CBDC on the financial systems. And consumer behaviors is one essential part of this simulation and tells us much better how to set the parameter of the CBDC design to avoid financial instability.
That leads us back to the fundamental question about the future of physical cash. Lots of the central banks that we interview say that they'll keep it indefinitely, but in decreasing amounts. So cash or no cash, Wolfram, most G7 country central banks seem to be sceptical about abolishing it completely. What are your thoughts on this? Will it run concurrently with CBDCs? Is it complementary with CBDCs?
Yeah, definitely. Globally, cash continues to be the dominant form of payment with over 80% of transactions at the point of sale. Cash is not just a means of payment, it's also part of our culture. Think of cash gifts at wedding or ong baos, the red envelopes at the Chinese New Year. And again, also this Chinese New Year, you could see the highest ever number of cash in circulation in China. You can also see that in the design of banknotes, they represent the country, culture of its citizens. That's why the ECB seeks the opinion of the public for the redesign of the new Euro series. So my answer is clearly a compliment. It will be a long time before we can do without cash. My personal belief is cash is here to stay. We see only the digital business model and digital transaction, which I doubt that will be our future, we can do away without cash.
And we certainly hear a number of policymakers in the US, for example, who believe that to be true of the dollar. We shall see. We definitely notice in our survey that cash was among the top three payment mechanisms. Extraordinary, really, for 70% of the people surveyed across all markets. I mean, there are various reasons for that. Cash has unique features that we're wondering how to redesign digitally, including privacy, and the issue of anonymity and state surveillance coming up as a barrier to CBDC is a frequent feature of our sessions. What do you think about that, Wolfram? How can those problems be solved in a way that suits regulators and indeed consumers?
Privacy and data protection are very important concerns to the public. And therefore, I believe CBDC, which is a digital form of today's public currency, which is cash, should therefore offer a similar level of privacy. I believe this is crucial for CBDC to be accepted by the general public. Of course, we need to cater also for governance and existing regulations. But I believe to have the options to make private payments should be a key feature of a public currency in any form.
But privacy doesn't necessarily mean anonymity. This is quite a complex tension, but an important distinction nonetheless.
Right. A CBDC should be designed in a way to preserve privacy while fully accepting AML compliance and anti-terrorist financing compliance. But we could implement it in a way that up to a certain amount, it should be possible to make fully anonymous payments, just like cash. And that's for buying medicine at the pharmacy or being used for day-to-day transactions where no data should be collected at all. The question is always, what type of information is stored at the central bank? Of course, jurisdictions vary on this topic and it comes down to local law and legislation. But a loss of privacy is a top concern with CBDC. It's important that people realize that currently the firms that enable digital payments are collecting and tracking personal data. Even worse, they monetize that data, and sometimes digitization is even associated with this asynchronity of collecting and using data. Central banks have above all public interests in mind, not interests in our personal data. Virtually or digital payments today require identification. So in actuality, CBDC could improve the level of privacy compared to other digital options that are currently available.
That's an intriguing idea, and I think important. So how do you enable that in the case of your CBDC solution?
With a token-based solution like Genophilia, the metadata of users and their payments do not need to be stored. Only the validity of the token is relevant here. Philia offers a governance layer separated from the operational data, which is configurable, to ensure a compliant provision of data for analytics. In case when suspicious activities are detected, it would be possible to match the identity stored at the wallet issuing provider with the transactions in question. Actually, nothing changes from today. If you pay with CBDC stored on a smart card, it's like paying with physical cash. If you pay with CBDC stored in a wallet issued by your commercial bank, you may give consent to the commercial bank to use the transaction data. It's actually configurable to offer both options, full privacy versus the required transparency.
And certainly that is the holy grail sought by regulators and the official sector. People also worry about security, Wolfram. It was one of the top three features that people requested in the survey that we've just conducted. How could CBDC be designed to foster operational and cyber resiliency?
Yes, security is always a concern for people when it comes to digital applications. That's something people often don't understand and cannot control on their own. That's why security by design is one of the most crucial aspects of a CBDC ecosystem. It has to be designed correctly from the beginning. As such, environment can become a target for cyber attacks. At the same time, people call for convenience. Often, subsequent security measures have impacts on the performance of the system.
And how did you solve that?
Our solution, Filia, is designed with no single point of failure. We ensure detailed security considerations at every layer of the system. CBDC is created in a highly secure air-gapped offline environment. Highly secure communication channels are used. The Filia core protocol relies on the use of cryptographic algorithms. Constant monitoring is also key. We have developed an entire product suite that implements artificial intelligence for anomaly detection. We follow an holistic approach. Security is also a lot more than just a technological discussion about appropriate algorithms. It should involve organizational processes as well at all stakeholders. Besides high security, we need to ensure interoperability and, of course, ease of use of CBDC. Emerging countries want to foster financial inclusion, and new payment systems must be simple.
Also, given that emerging countries have hitherto anyway been mostly cash-based, although they're catching up fast, do you think CBDCs can stimulate growth in those economies by removing friction around payments?
Yeah, CBDC bridges the digital divide and drives financial inclusion. It's one of the main motivators for emerging countries to develop a CBDC. Globally, 1 in 5 people have no access to financial services and are heavily dependent on cash. They have no possibility to borrow at competitive rates. Within the unbanked population of emerging economies, micro-entrepreneurs, for example, they run village stores or are remote-skilled workers, performance contract work for companies across the globe. With CBDC, they can grow and finance their businesses and engage in the wider economy. The governor of the Central Bank of Ghana assumes that the issuance of the ECD could add about 1% GDP growth over the next 6 years. For consumers, it would be easier to participate in the digital economy. The numbers in our survey confirm that 90% of Nigerian respondents say that they would use a CBDC.
Developing markets really seem to be on the move, Wolfram.
Yes, and they see a number of use cases with payments at digital marketplaces like online shops on top of that list. Payments is a crucial service for the entire economy. CBDC has the potential to boost the digital economy of all markets. It has to be efficient, truly interoperable, and can be a great foundation for innovation. And the potential is huge. 2.9 billion people worldwide don't use the internet today, according to a publication by the International Telecommunication Union. That's supposed to change in the coming years, and that means there will be a lot of opportunities for e-commerce, and CBDC can be the instrument that can be used in all these applications as a standard.
One of the themes that also frequently comes up in our sessions, particularly in certain developing markets with infrastructure challenges, is the concept of offline functionality and whether that's a key requirement in the design of CBDCs for those markets. What are your thoughts on that, Wolfram?
Yes, not less important for developed markets as for emerging markets, though. A legal tender should work in any situation. Even in developed countries, there are still areas with poor internet connection or power supply. Additionally, we have to have a parallel digital cash system in cases of severe or extended outages. Think about natural disasters. Up to now, cash has been the only means of payment that worked. With Filia, we can ensure that digital payments are still possible when there is limited connectivity. For this reason, secure consecutive offline payments are crucial for CBDC. I think it would improve acceptance of people to trust that CBDC will always work.
One of the striking things to us about this area is that the digital revolution came in large part from the US. Certainly a number of the major companies are from there that now dominate our lives so significantly, but Americans remain skeptical, it seems, about CBDC usage, which you also found with us in this survey. although there's a bit of movement now. So the Boston Fed recently published the results of Project Hamilton, which is their central bank digital currency experiment project with the MIT. Tell us a bit about that, Wolfram.
Yeah, Project Hamilton delivers great insights, and phase two is still running with a focus on topics as privacy, programmability, etc., and their effects on the architecture of the design of the CBDC. And I really look forward to getting more insights on that phase two. For me, one important result of phase one is that the blockchain not necessarily is the technology to choose, since the experiment was the inferior platform and created bottlenecks. And I can imagine that that was a bit of a surprise for many people. For us, it was always a confirmation of our approach.
Yeah, we've heard that elsewhere, including, of course, the PBOC and their important pilot, which didn't use DLT yet. And we'll watch that closely. What do you think are the three top factors that governments and central banks need to get right then, Wolfram, for CBDCs to be successful?
Well, first, the right features, the right design. It must be, CBDC must be designed with the user in mind. It should be, in my opinion, it should be close to cash as possible to be truly inclusive. Second, a CBDC must be interoperable and incorporate also future needs of users and businesses. It has to support the entire ecosystem that will be built around it and provide a platform for innovation and encourage competition. Third, a strong adoption strategy. We need strong collaboration between the public and the private sector. Commercial players will be there to offer the interface to the customers, and they know how to implement a new form of payment. They will be creating new services and business models that will make CBDC more attractive. Of course, strategies will differ across countries depending on the existing payment landscape and the needs of the users, but I believe that there's a huge potential in CBDC to drive inclusion, to drive digitization, and to drive the economy.
Thank you, Wolfram, and thank you again for working with us on this important project. Again, as you say, we see very different approaches in different regions with different levels of need and different priorities, but we certainly see underlying themes. I think that we've covered those very well with you today. And of course, the underlying theme that the public and private sector will need to collaborate carefully in this area is very clear in all countries. So thank you very much, Wolfram, for talking to us today and for conducting this research in partnership with us. We very much look forward to carrying on this important discussion about essentially the revolution of money. So thank you, Wolfram.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the OMFIF podcast.